Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, The Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search The Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Beltway Blitz time on Grant and Danny. We'll get to the Nats and the Commanders in this segment. When we talk Commanders, we're going to have to talk about Jacory Kroski-Merritt missing practice again today. He was listed as not practicing for a second straight day. So that's Wednesday, Thursday. If he's limited tomorrow, maybe he's got a shot. Could be a game time decision, but that is not ideal unless they list him as partially resting. But he's got a knee problem, and now he's missed 2 days of practice. So the young running back's status very much in question. Obviously, no Terry McLaurin for the Commanders at practice as well. His status currently in doubt. Let's kick off the Beltway Blitz, though. Britt Giroli of The Athletic joins us now. Does a great job covering Major League Baseball. Britt, it's good to have you back on the Blitz. What do you make of the Nationals' huge hiring of Paul Toboni to run their baseball operation, just 35 years old, coming over as a rising star in Boston's organization?
Yeah, I think a couple things, guys. I think it's certainly a big swing by the Nats. I think to get a guy like that to come from Boston, I mean, obviously they basically had to skip a level with him. He's an assistant GM, or he was, in Boston. Very well thought of, has really been a climber and has gone quickly up the ranks there. I've heard he's a very nice guy, a little bit light, obviously, on leading a team experience, right? Usually the progression is you go from AGM to GM to president. Obviously, he felt like he wasn't going to take the job unless he was going to be a true number one. He was probably going to be Breslow's number two in Boston this winter had he stayed there, guys. So I think it surprises me, really, I think in a good way, that the Learners were able to land someone like this, that they trust him enough to, as I reported last night, let him hire a GM under him. So it looks like they're going to do what they should have done a long time ago, fill out that front office and kind of get with the times and hopefully kind of get up to speed in analytics and data and just build out your team the way almost every organization is right now. So I think it is a good move. I am a little bit shocked. In a good way.
Yeah, I think that sentiment speaks for a lot of Nets fans, myself included, Britt. What do you think this means for the Learners, their involvement, lack thereof, however you want to quantify that? This is a good first step, but if it exists in, you know, in a vacuum, then so what, right?
Right. I think, you know, I'm curious. I would imagine the press conference is probably Monday, otherwise they have to wait until Friday. I'm curious what he says about this job to Boney, like why he wanted to come here, because you know, you look at this and this is certainly a rebuild situation, but they've been marred in a rebuild for a while. So, you know, did the Learner family say we're going to commit to payrolls again? You know, did he sell them on the fact that they don't need to spend this kind of money to win, that they could beat Tampa Bay or Cleveland? And you know, did he, you know, I'm kind of really curious as to how that all came together, because if we think, and there is a school of thought here, that the Learners are not in it for the long term, that they may revisit selling the team after the next CBA, which negotiations would be after the 2026 season. What sold them on this, and how far in are they willing to go? You know, what sold him on D.C.? Because certainly he could have stayed in Boston, been the GM, and probably would have been on the short list next winter to lead several baseball operations as well. So, you know, the Learners had to do a good job here of selling what they were going to do as owners. And I'm curious if their style changes at all versus what we saw the last few years of Mike Rizzo.
Yeah, Britt, it's a good point. I want to dive deeper into the GM search and maybe the marriage of outside voices and inside knowledge of the operation. How do you think things land for guys like Mike DiBartolo, the acting GM, his assistant Mark Shalaba, you know, Eddie Longos, who runs player development, and some of the high-ranking officials within the Nats.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. And you look at it, and you look at the guys that Toboney worked under, and, you know, Chaim Bloom is a good example. Like, Toboney came in, and he was with the three different, I think, leadership changes in Boston. And, you know, when Chaim Bloom came in, he didn't fire anyone. He kind of moved some people around, and he got his guys in place. But, you know, he didn't just come in and start saying, you know, everything that went on before was wrong. And I'd be surprised if that's the case here in D.C. I think as it relates to Mike DiBartolo, which is what people have been asking me, I think he's open to staying. I think having the ability to have a GM under him, you know, makes him either a candidate for the GM job, or perhaps they say, listen, we're going to have you be an AGM, but you're going to be in charge of this department over here. I don't necessarily think it's the end of the road for all of the longtime execs. I think there's going to be a lot of changes. I think often in these cases, too, guys could be working on multi-year contracts, and it could be really that next year is an audition, not just for the players on the field with the Nationals, but for executives, and to kind of evaluate the systems and the processes that are in place as well. I mean, smart executives don't go in and fire everybody, right? You don't burn it to the ground. You have to go in and see what's going on and see who is good and see where you can improve. And I think that's going to be the case here. I think there is a world where Mike DiBartolo does stay, and he does add to this organization. So I wouldn't rule that out.
What do you see as Toboney's biggest challenge coming here?
I think there's a lot of challenges, guys. I think the biggest challenge is going to be player development. And you look at what he's done, and you know, he obviously did a great job in helping rebuild Boston's minor league system. You know, he oversaw the draft when they drafted, you know, a lot of their stars, Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony, right? But the Nationals' problem has not been drafting studs. It has been developing these guys. It's been guys getting better in the national system. And I think to have a healthy, functioning pipeline, you have to have that. You have to have a seventh rounder. You have to find the Stephen Kwans of the world, right? The Tarik Skubals, the guys who aren't hyped prospects and who aren't super touted coming out of college. You have to find those guys, and you have to develop them. So I think that's going to be the real marker of whether or not they can do this. You look at Baltimore, and yes, they've struggled to do certain things, but what they did really well was they drafted and developed well, and they turned around that team so quickly because of what they were able to do there. And I think for the Nationals, that's what you have to look at. Now, you certainly would like, when the time comes, for the Nationals to be more aggressive in free agency than, you know, the team up the road. But I think when you look at what's going to turn them around quicker and what the biggest challenge is for someone running that department, it's going to be fixing the drafting and developing that's going on, fixing the pipeline, having the Nationals rank in the top five, you know, top 10 again of Major League Baseball is going to set them up for the future more than any kind of free agencies. And I understand people want stars. People want the learners to open up the checkbooks and this, that, and the other. But if they don't fix this, they're never going to be a contending, consistent big league team.
Rich Early, well said and great insight. Thank you. We'll be reading your work in The Athletic.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks,
you got
Britt.
It. There's Britt on the Beltway Blitz. Let's talk football. And looky, who was wandering around in the Navy Yard today.
Apparently, I'm wet, yeah.
I'm not even in studio, but it was raining outside. The boys looked outside, and Reaney was all wet. They brought him in to dry him off, and here he is in studio with us to talk football. It's Chris Russell. Slashy, how
hello,
are you, pal?
Hello, boys. I just thought I heard there was a retirement party here, so I thought I'd show up for free pizza and cake, and I missed the pizza.
You didn't get any pizza at the retirement party?
No.
Shout out to friend of the program, Stevie Bridgewater.
Stevie is awesome. Congratulations to the great Stevie. Yes,
that's
absolutely
right.
Many, 33-year career.
33, and she was telling me, yes, she started right around the early 90s doing this at, I mean, she's been through different formats, right? But at that time, Opie and Anthony and different people were in the Fairfax studio, so pretty cool.
Radio was a little bit different back then, boys. We used to actually use a razor blade to cut audio tape.
That's before my time, I think.
It is way before your time.
I learned carts before they became obsolete.
Reaney.
Yes, boys.
Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, a knee, missed practice for a second straight day. DNP with that knee. How worried should we be about that?
I should be, of course, worried. Now, he was dressed according to standing at the beginning, so I didn't know in the transition from things and whatever that they officially ruled him that he did not practice. So I don't know exactly what happened there. Maybe he felt something at the last second, maybe just cautious. They all said to the reporters privately yesterday, nothing to see here, nothing to worry worry about. I'll be worried. I'll be worried. And by the way, again, not to sound any alarm bells, but he was banged up a couple of times throughout training camp, right? And after preseason games. And we know this kind of position is physical. The question that I have is this going to be a constant theme, a constant thing where you're always worried if he's going to be, because when he's on the field, he's great. I mean, I don't know if you got the jump cut that he had on one of those runs. Yeah, I talked to him about it after the game on Sunday. I know you guys had him on too. I mean, the jump cut is insane what he can do when he's right.
Yeah, you wonder if that's the reason they haven't fed him a whole bunch of carries. Terry McLaurin looks like no go this week. That receiver position is really thin. How does that affect him this week? And then maybe if it's a longer-term thing going forward?
Well, so, I mean, obviously all these guys can play outside, right? Even though they're more probably apt at playing inside. So I guess you can get by. Chris Mora, I assume, would have a bigger role. We saw McCaffrey finally get the touchdown. It was wide open off the line of scrimmage. I don't know if Atlanta's going to do the same thing there. We know Jalen Lane's got speed, but we know he's raw. And obviously, you can't count on Noah Brown at all. And Debo is Debo. I'm surprised. I don't know about you guys. I don't know if you guys have discussed it. I'm very surprised that at this point, they haven't brought back KJ Osborne. They haven't brought back Michael Gallup. They haven't brought back Jamison Crowder. Three guys that are still available that have familiarity in the building with the scheme, with the terminology, with the system, with the quarterbacks. I'm very surprised that they haven't brought. I know they have Ja'Cory Brooks on the training camp roster. He'll get game day elevated. I'm just surprised they haven't brought in any of those guys just to like have a warm body count, because unless they're thinking that this is really like a hip flexor, which I guess Rap Sheet said this morning, and it's really only a 1 week thing, and even then, I'm still surprised.
They like their guys, it would appear, though, right?
Well, okay, great. How many guys do you have?
Not a lot, but that's what the practice squad's for. But are you saying bring those guys back for the P squad?
Yeah, where okay. Maybe you could game day elevate one of them.
Right, just have them in the building.
Yeah, exactly. Right, because I would say Ja'Cory Brooks is obviously, and I'm forgetting the rest of the practice squad roster. You guys are going to have to help me out. But he's going to get a game day elevation. Okay, fine. And you have five guys that you can roll out there, right? Am I counting that right? Debo, Jalen, McCaffrey, well, maybe Noah, but... and Chris Moore, right?
Moore, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, you have at least four guys you can count on, maybe five. But my point is you how anybody could count on Noah Brown at all? Period. Ever again. And I've been saying this since he got here last year. I don't know how anybody can count on him. You cannot count on him. He gets hurt getting off the trainer's table. Okay. And then now with Terry being so kind of weird, where he's seeing 14 different specialists? I don't know, man. I'm just surprised that they've been this laissez-faire, if you will, with the roster.
Doesn't seem to be a ton of urgency in that regard. This week, though, looking at the Falcons, coming off that drubbing, one of the worst games you're going to see any team play against a very pedestrian Carolina Panthers team. Just sort of give me your prognosis here. This might be a Russell-type game where everybody's trying to outrun the other. Like, this feels a little smash-mouth. Like, if Nebraska played itself in a red-white game in the spring of 1990 with Tommy Frazier on the wishbone. But that's my recipe this week, is to try to do what you did to the Raiders and bully ball them.
I love it. No, absolutely. It's exactly what I said when I was walking around in the rain without an umbrella in the Navy Yard.
Who were you talking to?
I was just talking to myself. I was yelling to myself and anybody that would potentially
care. You're going to scare people.
The alley pod with Chris Russell.
I know. But, you know, you got
to the guy over by the Metro that's always talking to himself that I always see?
Yeah. Okay. Although today, I guess I didn't see you because you weren't here. Right?
I didn't see you
okay.
For sure.
We know Bijan is going to be the main principle of their offense, right? It's just not like 3 yards in a cloud of dust. We know he can run to the perimeter. We know he can catch the ball out of the backfield. So tackling, covering him, wheel routes are scary, out of my mind. Of course, that's the number one concern. But from a Commander's perspective, I said the same thing, again, out loud earlier, is they have to take the same attitude that they did to Vegas with a different idea. Atlanta's going to want to come out and fly all over the place, use their speed, use their athleticism, Pierce, and that weird guy that I can't pronounce the name of who had a sack in the game last December and had a sack last week, and get after it and get the crowd going and get their defense fired up. And they're going to say, we have to win this game. We have to do it by ourselves. Forget the offense. Forget any help. We have to come out strong and get everybody whipped into a lather. That's what they're going to do. I think they're going to try and stunt. I think they're going to try and play all sorts of weird twist games and all that stuff to try and stuff the run. And Washington has to be patient with it. They have to do what you guys hate them doing, which is being patient. And even if you take a negative one-run yard loss or a zero gain or whatever, you can't give up if you're Cliff Kingsbury after three carries. You can't give up because even if Jaden's back, with Terry, without Terry, and I believe it'll be without Terry, they have to be able to run the ball for this offense to operate with any sort of peak efficiency, period.
When you say that weird guy, you mean weird name? Is it David Onyemata?
Yeah, that.
Okay. I was going to say, is it Leonard Floyd?
No, not Leonard Floyd. David Onyemata. I think he had a sack in the Sunday night game last year. I think he had a sack last week, if I'm not mistaken.
I want to hear you give a try to Rook.
I can't do this one.
Aurora-ro.
Rook Aurora-ro.
Oh. I mean, you just, that's a wacky one.
Wait, are you doing a Scooby-Doo bit?
Rook Aurora-ro. Yeah, that's a second-round pick, by the way. That was a high draft pick.
Yeah,
hey, Slashy, yay or nay on Jaden Daniels? What's your guess?
My guess is yes at this point, but I, of course, would love to see a full practice designation tomorrow. I wouldn't, but my guess is—
If he's limited tomorrow, will you still say he plays?
So limited all 3 days, right?
Yeah.
I would not play him. I think they'll play him, but I don't like that.
All right, I want to dive into that with you next, Danny. If Jaden Daniels is limited for a third straight day, doesn't get through a full workload in any one practice, would you be okay with them playing him? Chris Russell, Britt Ciroli on the Blitz. We appreciate their efforts. It's Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Jaden Daniels limited in today's practice. It's Thursday, which means we are now just 3 workout days away from a Sunday tilt in Atlanta with the Falcons. And the question becomes, if Jaden Daniels is not full go in tomorrow's practice, would you be okay with clearing him if you were Dan Quinn and Adam Peters? We just asked Chris Russell that question. He said if he can't go through a full practice, he wouldn't feel good about letting him go out and play. That's my thought, too. I just think that that feels like common sense and that's intuitive. I actually retweeted a video that John Keim posted from Inside the Bubble today of Jaden Daniels going through a bag drill. And to me, what it appears like is, first off, he's moving very, very well when he's just kind of jogging along. Much better than I thought as he's kind of throwing on the run. He looks pretty good. He looks pretty normal. He then does this drill where he's like going through bags, and I don't have anything to compare it to in terms of like when he's not wearing a brace, but it just seems to me like when he's backpedaling through there with a brace on, which he's never worn before, that's pretty big and hulking, I'd imagine, that he's a little stiffer than he typically would be, that there's some less mobility. But He's actually, for what it's worth on the videos, and we're not doctors, we just played on the radio, he's moving pretty well, I mean, at practice, which is positive. I did not think when we saw videos it would look like it is. I mean, he looks semi-normal, I would say.
Which is, as you said, a very good sign. It tells me that we're trending, we're closer, that's good. If it were still, oh my God, he looks like, you know, knee brace and it's stiff and he's, you know, sort of not really moving around, or if it's ginger, or if his gait is different, etc., then I'm going, oh my God, what are we talking about? But yeah, this tells me that if this was NFC title game on Sunday, maybe you could wrap it up the right way and you could heat it and the right painkillers and the right, you know, injections and whatever, and you could give it a go. That's not what this is. So for me, it's a non-starter. Like, if he's limited still, again, this isn't a bruise. This isn't a jammed finger on his non-throwing hand where it's a pain tolerance issue and you've got to do a workaround. There's no working around the knee. There are a couple spots in the body where it's a non-negotiable for me, and this is one of them where this is, again, it's not just a discomfort thing. It's not about comfort, right? There's no toughness question here. He played with a broken rib last year. That's not the, you know what I mean? Like, I got no questions about that guy's willingness to stick it on the line in adverse conditions. I saw him do that against some of the best teams they played, getting clocked by TJ Watt and company when his rib was already broken. I got no questions about that. This isn't a toughness thing for me. This is a long-term, viable health protection thing for me.
Well, seeing the videos today that came out of the bubble of what the media got to see, which is the most they've seen at any point, which is probably also telling that he's just doing more at these practices because it's harder to hide his activity from them. But you add that to his confidence at the mic yesterday. He's himself. He's not compromised. He feels normal. He wants to play. You know, all the things he was saying very succinctly, very confident about his ability if he was going to go out there and play on this knee right now. It does seem like it's trending toward there is a real possibility that he goes. I'm erring on the side of caution still and assuming that maybe he does not play, and I'm still going to say I think I was like at 70% he doesn't play. I'm down to 60% he doesn't play. But I'm just assuming after the win, the way Mariota played, you give him one more week, maybe he gets to come back without a brace on or something like that a week from now. But I'm fascinated by the idea of whether or not he has to get through a full practice for them. Because this was a question asked to Dan Quinn, and it was one of the few things he's actually truly answered over the last 2 weeks or so. It was Nikki Jabala, I think, who asked the question. This was last week about whether Jaden needed to get through a full workout.
Do you need to see him back on the field with the rest of the team before you feel okay?
Yeah, I would. It's important, timing, reps, the movements. But it was a good first step to it, Nikki. But, yeah, we'd have to get some reps for sure.
So here's what we don't know from that answer, though. Back on the field, he's back on the field. Like, you're seeing him jog, you're seeing him run. I'm sure he's cutting and sprinting, and you're going through bags, you're doing some of those things. Did he mean he needs to get through a full practice with no issues? He didn't say that. I'm putting those words in his mouth. Or is he just saying, yeah, if you could get through whatever benchmarks we give you over a few days of practice while limited, and like, what is limited? Why is he still limited? What don't they want him to do today? Right. What didn't they let him do today? Is it just the 11-on-11 part, whatever that looks like against scout team, where you don't love him having to change directions for the stuff that's not predictable when a defender comes free and now he breaks down? I mean, if you can't do that, obviously you can't play, but we just don't know where he's limited other than the distinction that, you know, we see on the injury report.
I think it's a good distinction. So to me, like, it's again, that limited designation leaves so much mystery to it, right? Is it, hey, we don't want him in 11-on-11 because, you know, there are bodies flying everywhere. He might get stepped on or something, and then, you know, next thing, or the grass is wet. I mean, who knows, right? Obviously, they go in the bubble, but you know what I'm trying to say. We're just holding him out of this one part of it, or he's literally trotting out to the field, riding the stationary bike for, if we're there for 2 hours, for 95 minutes, and then he, you know, flips a couple balls into a net, and then he goes back inside limited. We don't know the distinction there. I think it's important. Seeing him go through those workouts, though, was a bit reassuring that the arrow is trending in the right direction. But I guess to me it's that you're holding him back for a reason. There's a difference between Laremy Tunsil, who gets more vet days than anybody in the history of mankind, just because he's banged up. Same with Zach Ertz, bumps and bruises, normal stuff. Hey, man, you're a pro. You know everything in the system already. You're good to go. You know, take Wednesday off just because you need the extra day to reheal your body. If it's that, okay, but it's not. We know that, right? There's an injury reason why he's being held out. So, to me, this would have to be a you can do everything. Not only can you do everything, but the next day is good too. Think of a pitcher coming back from injury. Hear Mackenzie Gore talk about it, right? Where he's going, I'll throw today, and tomorrow we'll see how the body feels. That's as important as being able to throw that time. Because if you throw and next day you come in, it's like, oh my God, my elbow's barking, or my back hurts, or whatever, then the recovery isn't all the way there. You're still breaking up some scar tissue. We're doing this, that, and the other. If you don't recover the right way, then you're, again, potentially risking something. So it, to me, is being able to complete that full cycle of regular, normal behavior at a practice where you wouldn't, if you just were dropped in from outer space, you would never know that he was injured. And the next day, he's fine. Again, this is all relative to football terms where nobody's really ever 100% fine because you're getting, 70 car wrecks a week.
Speaking of Mackenzie Gore, he will be on the show today here on Grant and Danny, the ace of the Nationals weekly appointment on The Fan. That is coming up a little bit later on. You'll also hear from Cal Ripken Jr. in just a few minutes. I'm actually in Annapolis emceeing an event for Cal's charity, the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation, tonight. So he's going to be joining us on site here in the room where I'm hanging out broadcasting ahead of his event this evening on the water in Annapolis. The injury report, because it dropped in the last half hour, just to give you the deets, we told you that Jacory Crosky-Merritt did not practice. Neither did Terry McLaurin with the ongoing quad problem. Limited for Jaden Daniels. The other guys that didn't practice, Percy Butler with the hip, now back-to-back days. So if you don't have him, I don't know if Darnell Savage would be ready to go. Remember, Preston Smith did not play last week after being signed in week, so maybe that's an indicator of how they would operate. But it would certainly mean more Tyler Owens, maybe more Jeremy Reeves. Both of those guys have done okay with their added opportunities. And then the other players that didn't practice were the two guys that got injured against the Packers, John Bates with a calf and a groin, and Noah Brown with a groin and a knee. Bates, who's such a good blocking tight end, they didn't miss him at all for the one game. 200 rushing yards, 170 and a half against the Raiders, and the strength for him is moving people around in the run game. But there's only a matter of time before the clock strikes midnight on trying to be a really good running team without your best blocking tight end. He is one of the best in the league at that. And then Noah Brown, if you're moving on without Brown for a week, see the Raiders game, it's not the end of the world until you also don't have McLaurin. So since we have a pretty good idea that McLaurin's not playing, and now you're getting into Friday before Brown would be able to test or do anything on the field, not having either of those receivers at a position where you only had five guys after cutdown day, six total now after elevating a practice squad member, I mean, it's just a very, very thin position group. So how do you get around a thin position room at receiver? Generally go deeper at tight end. Well, one of your top tight ends is unavailable as well. So if you're going in 12 personnel, heavy personnel, I would think they'd have to go back to their plan from the Vegas game, which means putting a tackle at tight end in run looks. You're not really having routes run by any means, but that might be the way they go about it. We will be joined next by Cal Ripken Jr. on site here in Annapolis. It's Grant and Danny on The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, The Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search The Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Grant and Danny on the Fan live from Annapolis, and we are joined now by the Hall of Famer and a multi-time MVP, Cal Ripken Jr. is with us. And Danny, this is going to be Cal's highest tech broadcast he's ever done. I've got him with one earbud in.
Oh, man.
I've got the other earbud. We're just kind of shoulder to shoulder here. He's done TBS, and he's been all over the world doing this. I said, this will be your highest tech broadcast.
It reminds me when Billy and I had a show with XM Sirius in the early days, and we had to carry that on the road with us. We're going back in time. We're plugging back in.
That's right. So Cal and I both one ear in, but this way, at least Danny, you'll get to participate. I didn't want to hog Cal, and it's too rare that we get the Hall of Famer on the show.
I know.
So I wanted you to be able to be part of the broadcast,
which I certainly appreciate. But Cal, when you and Billy were doing the show, did Billy have to hold the mic too? Is it the same?
No. We had two inputs for the mic.
Wow. Yeah.
Very high tech. I told him, I said, I came here for a broadcast for one, but the two of us will make it work. But we appreciate you, Cal, joining us. I know it's a big night. I'm honored to be a very, very small part of this and to get to introduce some of the dignitaries this evening. But tell people, we're out in Annapolis. It's the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. This event, just reading up about it the last couple of days, is really incredible. How long have you been doing it, and what are we in store for this evening?
Well, I mean, our foundation started when just shortly after Dad died, and that was he died in 98, I believe. I guess our foundation has celebrated over 20 years in general, but this event here probably around 12 or 13 years, started out as a smaller fundraiser, trying to tap into the Annapolis area and some of the D.C. area. And it's just grown each and every year. People look forward to it. So it's going to be a wonderful night. David Rubenstein is going to play your role. He's going to take the mic and entertain us all, I think. But it's just everyone comes together. We have a good time. Brady Anderson usually comes back for this one. Eddie usually comes back. So we'll be well represented from the Orioles standpoint, that's for sure.
How many people said no before you asked Grant?
How many people said?
I heard that was number 8.
John Maroon was tasked with that, and I think he came up with Grant's name pretty fast.
That's awesome.
I think he was up on the high list.
Well, I'm fired up. It's going to be very, very fun. Cal Ripken Jr. is with us. A lot of things to cover with you, but I wanted to ask you about the news in Major League Baseball this week that we're going to get the challenge system implemented next year. Two challenges per team for balls and strikes. Where do you come down on electronic strike zone?
When we first started our youth baseball academies and our tournaments, if we would have had the money, I would have made it all ABS. The only complaints we get from the experience, the Ripken experience from the parents is that the umpires. And the umpires do a good job, overall. And I think I'm for the system. And I guess the choice was to either do it in a challenge system sort of way or actually do it all the time or use the technology where it corrects things. Because I really believe that a whole game can swing on one pitch. You know, it's a 2-1 count, base is loaded, and the slider is going to be down and away, and they get the call, it's 2-2 as opposed to 3-1 with the hottest hitter at the plate. It changes the opportunity. And I think tennis does a good job. Football does a good job with the technology, and we have that here. I guess the question is two challenges enough? How's that going to work? So there's going to be a little bit of a learning period and a tweaking period, and who knows? Maybe it goes to all ABS at some point, but I like the idea.
What have you made just generally of the changes to baseball really over the last half decade where it's I don't want to say it's a different game now because you stood still 60 feet, 6 inches, et cetera, but it feels different, certainly. Everything from wild card to some of the rule changes.
Well, I mean, I like the addition of the playoff teams. You know, it seems 162, you play really hard. And in the old days, you had to win the division to actually make the playoffs. Then the wild cards came, and then now there's a few more opportunities, which makes the month of September really interesting. And many times it comes down to one game, and which I think is really, really exciting. The other rule changes, I told the commissioner that I think the clock belonged in basketball, and then I had to tell him that I was wrong because the clock has really shaped the behavior and the pace of the game. And it's really interesting. You didn't realize that it had gotten so slow and that's what was going on. It just needed to be enforced because there was always a rule that you had to throw a pitch within a certain amount of time. But now with the clock up there, they can enforce it. And I think Harold Reynolds told me he actually took out the stopwatch in the 83 World Series and see if we complied to the rules right now. And he said we were all within that time frame all the time. So I think the pace of play was that way years ago, and then it got out of hand. So I think the clock has done a good job. I didn't like the bigger bases or the two step-offs or disengagements. But I think there's a strategy involved in that, and that's kind of got the running game going a little bit more now, which I think is pretty interesting. I still don't like the putting a runner on second base, because, again, with the playoffs go down to one game, you didn't earn your way to second base in the extra innings. And you could get a broken bat, jam job to second base, move the runner over, medium fly ball to center field, close play at the plate, runner scores, you bring the closer in, they close out the game, and somebody wins without earning that run. So I still don't like that one.
Cal Ripken Jr., the Hall of Famer, with us on Grant and Danny. So I've said this many times on the air, and I'm not just saying this because we're shoulder-to-shoulder sharing earbuds right now, Cal. But
I got my arm around you, too.
We're getting close. I appreciate you grinning and bearing it. But the reason I'm the baseball fan I am to this day is your streak in 96, 95, in that era, and then the 98 home run chase. Those two things in my childhood made me the Major League Baseball fan that I am. And we just celebrated, I now feel really old.
Yeah.
But we just celebrated 30 years at Camden Yards, was able to go out during those final couple of days as we're counting down and see everybody getting ready to throw the party for you. But 30 years ago, it was 21-31 with the big numbers on the warehouse. Can you believe, A, that it's already been 30 years? And then what was that celebration like for you getting to go back to Camden to look back at those days?
So I can't believe it's 30 years. In many ways, it seems like it was yesterday. Your memory is pretty clear on what happened that night. And it's kind of interesting all together. I've never really been one, to celebrate the anniversaries or kind of, because the accomplishment happened at a certain time. Nothing's changed. It's just time has gone by. And so, although this time the Orioles were really gung-ho about doing it, I was unsure how that was going to come off. Even the Bobby Bowe and Rafael Palmeiro pushing me down the line a little bit, which was a good idea. But it was really well received. A lot of energy in the ballpark that night. It was the Dodgers. We had a sellout crowd. It really was a nice trip down memory lane, I think, from behind to get a walk-off. So somebody was looking out for us that night.
The way the game is now, it's such a power game. There's no Maddux. There's no Tom Glavine. There's no Dennis Martinez with 17 different pitches. It feels like if you don't throw 100, you can't even get noticed. And then at home plate, it's, can you move a runner? No one cares about that. Your true outcomes. What have you made kind of that evolution? And how would some of the greats like you fit in today?
Well, how do I answer this question? I see signs of, that being valued again. Mm. I see signs of the small ball and moving a runner over and getting a productive out and not striking out with a guy on third and less than two out. You see signs of the old type play coming back, because in the end, in order to execute against the very best pitchers in the league, and usually it comes out in the playoffs, then you'll start to see a bunt. But it's still valuable during the course of the season. So I like the idea of putting, a hit and run. I saw a delayed steal this year. I saw a hit and run attempt, one or two in the season, and you haven't seen that.
Seeing old friends.
And as far as the power pitching, the analytics favor the swing and the miss.
Right.
And then there's a lot of people that throw hard. Now people are training to throw hard, but then the injury factor is coming into play. The Orioles got killed with the injuries, and that really hurt our season early this year. So I see in the future, a value of a pitcher being able to get somebody out multiple times, and not just go, all out for 100 pitches and then let's bring in the next live arm. You want to see somebody extended in the game, and you want to see somebody, have the craft of pitching. I was talking to Mike Messina about that the other day. Mike had a pretty good power arm himself at times. He could throw the ball past you. But the beauty of Mike Messina, like Maddux and Glavine and those guys, when they didn't have their super stuff, they could figure out how to get the hitters out. And all of a sudden, they're in the eighth inning of a game, and you got a lead. So I see that coming back, and I see some signs around the league where some teams are valuing that. And I wouldn't be surprised the next couple of years you start to see, the control-type pitcher or the pitcher that has 16 pitches come back into the game a little bit more.
You know what no one ever mentions about Cal Ripken Jr.'s 26-32 games played in a row is the game you actually missed when Ryan Minor, it was just kind of without fanfare, he just kind of takes third base and plays, was actually a day of a doubleheader, if memory serves. So you played in a game that day. Isn't that right?
That's not how I remember it.
No?
I think it was a night game. It was the last game of the season at home against the Yankees. So ESPN had the game, I believe. Chris Berman had it. It was just one game. So I came in at 5 till 7 or 10 till 7.
How did it go? Did you make the call?
I told the manager, I said, tonight's the night. You know, because I didn't want to have to deal with all the hoopla before the game and not put that on the team. I thought we can do it after the game. And I didn't want it to be announced. You know, I wanted it just to play out sort of naturally. So when Ryan Minor was supposed to take the field, they went to him and said, you're going to play in third tonight. First of all, he didn't believe it. He thought it was some sort of
prank.
What
a prank, yeah.
And I had to go up to him.
Very funny.
And I had to go up to him and say, Ryan, you know, you're playing. You know, go, you want to take the field. And then the cool part about that was, and I looked at the Yankee dugout, and they realized, you know, what was happening. And then all of them got on the top step of the dugout and gave me sort of a standing ovation. Wow. And I was wondering, you know, why did they get it so quickly? But then I remember that Joe Torre, or whoever got the lineup card, they must have seen the lineup card at the time. So they went back before we took the field and probably said, hey, this is they probably planned for it a little bit. But the whole stadium then started to unfold, and then it became a positive memory, a positive interaction. I didn't know what to do. I mean, I was in the dugout. I went to the clubhouse one time. Eric Davis told me, come sit next to him and put some, you know, turf shoes on, you know, because he knows how to sit on the bench. I went out to the bullpen because I wondered, what do those guys do out there for the hotel game? And I went out there and sat out there for a while. But it turned out to be a celebration of the 26-32 as opposed to ending for some other reason.
Yeah, and it was hilarious on the telecast. I remember watching it in my dorm room. Like, they were gently, and it was all good fun, but making fun of you because you clearly didn't know what to do.
No, I mean, when you're in something for so long, and then all of a sudden you feel like you're on the outside looking in, and I didn't like that feeling at all.
Yeah.
I'd much rather be in the game.
You are busy now. I mean, we were just talking about it before you came on, but yeah, the wedding within the family. You went to the Ravens game a couple nights ago in prime time. You were at Northwest Stadium for the opener. Seems like you have a lot on the calendar. You're not really doing the retirement thing very much.
Oh, I thought I was moving towards retirement. We sold our last minor league team, and we sold the majority interest in our kids' business. Now we're expanding. We have a smaller piece of a much bigger pie. We're expanding really quickly, but I don't have the day-to-day responsibility for that. And so I thought, yeah, this is kind of cool. I'll edge towards retirement. Then the Orioles opportunity came up. David Rubenstein called me and asked me to join the group, and I, you know, was ecstatic about that. And I'm starting to get pulled back in baseball-wise, which I want to be able to help, but I tell them I'm not looking for a job. You know, I enjoy being around this group of players, very talented players, young, and I can help them in some ways, and I'm enjoying that too. So it seems like in our social calendar's filling up quite a bit. So it seems like there's a lot of stuff going on.
Well, tonight is quite a cool thing. Again, here in Annapolis, Ripken's Uncorked for the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. I'll be lucky enough to emcee this event. I got to say, Danny, one of the first people I ever got to interview when I was a young guy, when I was 10 years old, one of the first things I was ever credentialed for, I don't know why, but the Orioles inexplicably allowed me to come as a little 10-year-old on opening day and to interview my hero, Cal Ripken Jr. And that day, my first couple interviews were like Will Clark, who was not very nice, by the way. I mean, he is a good guy, but like he did not enjoy the fact that a 10-year-old was interviewing him on opening day. And then I talked to Albert Bell. So like those were my first two people.
Like, man, this
and
is
then
tough.
Cal Ripken Jr. And he could not have been more awesome and great. And I was like, all right, this is going to be okay. But yeah, it was, you were like hitting third in that order and right in front of the dugout there. I've still got the picture. You couldn't have been better.
You made me think of a few things. So Will must not have been hitting very well because he usually was a pretty jovial, outspoken guy. Albert, everybody thought Albert was a bad teammate, you know, and they were talking about him, but I thought he was a great teammate. But he didn't have much patience for the media, so I could see him, you know, especially if you sat in his chair in the locker room, you might have been scared away from.
He was not a small guy either.
No, he's a big guy, intimidating guy. But that was a good time. I mean, I had a chance to play with those guys and get a chance to feel who they were as people, and I really enjoyed that. So I feel for you a little bit where you dealt with rejection or unkindness, maybe.
No, I wouldn't even say that. It was just, as I now look back as an actual professional 37-year-old doing this, like, when a kid's in the clubhouse, people are kind of like, what is going on? And I didn't know the difference. I'm just walking up trying to, like, I'm Tim Kirkchen, you know, trying to break down baseball, and they're like, this is really weird.
Well, I mean, it worked because look where you are.
I guess if you act as if, right, if you pretend enough.
That's
but
Grant's
no, this
mantra, yeah.
That's right. If we get a chance to chop it up with Cal Ripken Jr. in Annapolis, we do that. Thank you again for joining us on our video chat here, and I'm looking forward to tonight. Should be a blast.
Appreciate you, Cal.
We're looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Have a
Grant
good one.
And Danny coming back with you on The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.